Hey, John.
Hey, Nick.
I give you the incredible.
And this is Stranger Still.
Welcome to Stranger Still,
a podcast where we fly around in our little planes.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah.
And you're over there wearing your little aviator cap.
I got the one with the propeller on top. If I spin too fast, I'll go up high. My name's John Began.
Yeah, I have a scarf around my neck, and my name is Nick Wood. How's it going, John?
Pretty decently.
We're talking about things that fly today.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about flying machines. But not that flying machine. We're talking about multiple flying machines. In celebration of our network's Patreon drive, it's the last day of our Patreon drive for the Flying Machine Network. So what better way to celebrate than to talk about 10 wacky and wild flying machines?
Thanks, BuzzFeed.
Yeah, right? Surprisingly, BuzzFeed did not come up in my research, but wow. Such credible websites like... I had a hard time finding them because then I actually went and did research, but top10s.net with a Z, of course, ListVerse, and oddorwhat.com.
Odd or what?
It was hard to read because it looks like odor with two Ds.
Oh, that's how you say otter in Britain.
Yeah.
They don't have them over there, so they're not really sure what their names are because I couldn't ask them in person.
Hey, John, do you know what flying machines are?
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do.
What are flying machines?
Flying machines are networks of podcasts.
No, the other one.
Oh, they fly up in the air and they're made of bamboo and idiocracy most of the time.
Yeah. Well, for those that don't know, planes were invented in 1902 when the Wright brothers stole a lot of inventions from other people, combined them into one thing, and it took off the ground
yep,
and didn't
they
crash.
They took the watermark right off the right off the planes.
Yeah. They just kind of squeegeed that Getty Images watermark right off of there and used it for themselves. But before that and after that, we've had quite the history with things that fly and people trying to fly.
Pterodactyls. That's it.
That's basically it. Yeah. Until humans came along.
Right.
Actually,
we said, what if that thing had windows and we were inside?
What if that pterodactyl had windows?
What if it was big and not alive?
Do you think in 1485 we knew what pterodactyls were?
I mean, in 1485 we probably didn't know what water was.
Actually, you're not
we
wrong.
Drank rum and stuff.
Yeah, we didn't know what it was. But in 1485, that's where we begin our journey with wacky and wild flying machines with a little man you may know as Leonardo da Vinci.
Now, did you choose to say wacky and wild because Wild and Crazy Kids is copyrighted?
Yes.
Okay.
I did my research beforehand.
Well, now I owe them some money.
So back in 1485, Leonardo da Vinci, he's known for his art. He's also known for his wacky and wild inventions.
He's known for his wild and crazy kids.
Yeah, he had a lot of wild and crazy kids launching water balloons at each other at a giant trebuchets.
Trebuchets. He's so fancy.
That's
the original flying
then.
Machine. Yeah.
No, trebuchet is like the catapult that like... Whoosh,
yeah, you know? That's the original flying machine.
Oh, okay, sure. It makes things fly, doesn't it?
For a little bit.
Man, we're way off topic today.
It's right on topic.
Everyone's surely seen pictures of Leonardo da Vinci's flying machines. He had like two famous ones.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this episode is going to be more than two because I kind of paired a lot into groups like this. There was the ornithopter and the aerial screw, which isn't as fun as it sounds.
Yeah, it's
so
it's got a different meaning today.
Yeah.
According to the airline services.
Yeah. So the first one that we have here, I have the images here for you to describe.
Mm-hmm.
I would like you to try to describe the ornithopter to our audience who is probably driving right now and doesn't want to Google this on their phone. Can you describe this?
Sure. Yeah. It's like God made a skeleton of a giant bird,
mm-hmm.
but didn't have time for the organs. So he just put skin on it.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, that's right. There is this little, there's like bat wings on the side and like a flap on the back is like held together with like wood or bamboo or something. And then there's this board in the middle of all that people would lay on. And it was just a concept. What we're looking at here is like someone built this damn thing, but as far as we know, he never built these. It was just a theory. So in theory, it had a 33-foot wingspan and a person would lay on that board in the middle and crank a pulley system with their hands
or
and their feet.
And that soldier boy.
and they would crank that Soldier Boy. And by cranking those with their hands and feet, they were supposed to make the wings flap, which would give them lift like a bird, I guess.
It was probably really difficult.
Yeah, the other famous one is the aerial screw, and everyone probably knows what this is, but if you could take a stab at describing it for us.
Yeah, it's kind of like a big drill upside down.
Yeah.
With a little pouch for you to hang out on the bottom.
Yeah, it's kind of like a steampunky. Like
It looks like a bar stool upside down with a big drill on
top. Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's like a steampunk helicopter. It's got like this corkscrew propeller on the top, and then
it probably wobbles
basket.
Really silly when it flies.
Yeah. Well, it probably didn't fly very well. So I think this is the one everyone's familiar with. It was supposed to be made out of reed and linen, not bamboo, I guess. And the propeller was only 15 feet in diameter, so significantly smaller than the bat wings, mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call them.
And you can attack your enemies from below. Yeah. The most strategic advantage.
Yeah, well, apparently 4 people were supposed to sit in that basket as well, and they would sit on it and hand crank some gears that was supposed to get the propeller spinning fast enough to gain lift.
Like when you're in those teacups at an amusement park.
Yeah, just imagine there was like a corkscrew on top of that. That lifted you in the
air. How dangerous and delightful.
As far as we know, he never built these. And I think throughout time, like on History Channel specials, people have tried to replicate them.
And Futurama.
And Futurama. Oh, yeah, there's that planet full of Da Vincis and he's the stupidest guy. What a good show. But that's where we begin our journey. How do you feel about the Ornithopter and the aerial screw?
I would probably think that the aerial screw would win in a fight against the Ornithopter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because it would drill right through it. Mm-hmm. But neither of them will fly.
No, absolutely not. All of the rest of the ones that we have are things that people actually built. But that was like the craziest one that everyone knows. The next one on our list is actually just a hot air balloon. But I put it on our list because of the things that they attached to it. So in 1783, the first manned air balloon flight took place by Jean-François Pilatre de Rosière and François Laurent de Arlandes. That's not the interesting one.
Did you ever do like a genealogy test?
Why? Because I sound really French.
Well, I could just save you some money and tell you how white you are.
Thanks, bud. So that's not the interesting one, other than listening to me try to pronounce their names. But 2 years later, this Frenchman named Jean-Pierre Blanchard and this American guy named John Jeffries wanted to take a hot air balloon and float it across the English Channel from England into France. Mm.
Never trust a man with two first names.
Jean-Pierre?
John Jeffries.
Oh, John Jeffries. Poor guy.
Yeah. Matthew Ricky. Like, come on.
Yeah. John Began.
Hmm.
I know so many people with the first name Began.
Yeah. Began, my cousin.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Began Fettuccini.
Oh, yeah. Began Fettuccini is my second cousin. Yeah. I can't forget about him.
So
even if I try to forget about it.
Do you want to describe what you see here? It's kind of hard to make out. It is a hand drawing, but if you are out there and you want to Google Blanchard hot air balloon flight, it'll come up.
It's a dum-dum pop.
Okay.
With a basket on the bottom. And I guess they have kites to steer? Is that what's happening?
Sort of. So it's like your classic old-timey hot air balloon where it's like this big ball and then they have these ropes coming down from the middle of it held to a basket. But off the side of the basket, they had a hand-powered propeller that they would like hand crank, mm-hmm. that was supposed to push it forward.
Yeah, it was really hard to get helium because Party City bought it all the rights to it at the time.
Party City wasn't around yet. That was their main problem. They also had, what you're seeing there are wings.
Oh, it's Party Village at the time.
Party Village, yes. Ye old Party Village.
Yeah.
Off to the side, what you thought were kites were actually wings that they would flap. They were trying to flap those wings to get lift and to steer it. And my favorite thing is they attached boat oars to the side in hopes of steering the balloon. And none of these worked.
And swiping away at tree branches that are going to pop it.
Yeah, so the reason I put this on our list is because, first of all, it's the second manned air balloon flight, the first one to cross the English Channel. Mm-hmm. But I just love the imagery of these two dudes up like 2,000 feet above the earth with these oars like rapidly rowing, trying to like a Looney Tune.
I guess, I mean, they're also in the image flying over water, so it's not so bad if they land in it.
Yeah, I guess
But they have to just slowly and sadly row back to shore.
Maybe when people were like, hey, why'd you put oars on the side of that thing? They're like, oh, just in case we land in the water. But in reality, they're like, we're gonna steer this damn thing.
Yeah. I remember they're having a gladiator fight.
Yeah. I imagine them exactly like Daffy Duck, like when he flies off off the boat, but he's still rowing in the water, you know?
Yeah. As long as you don't look down, you're good. That's cartoon rules.
Right, cartoon rules. The next one here is Alexander Goople's sesquiplane. Thank you. Good luck spelling that. Do you want to describe this one for us?
Yeah, this dummy's on a bicycle with a penguin above him with a propeller on it.
It does look like a penguin sliding across the
like
ice.
Like a pelican.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I thought that was a bicycle. It's not. So this, I think people might recognize this image, but it's like this giant balloon with wings coming off of it with like wires coming down to this bicycle-like contraption.
Everything's very bird-shaped.
It is very so bird-shaped, far. Except yeah. There's a propeller on the front. There's like a rudder on the back. And this thing came around in 1883, and I put this on our list because it's like the most gentlemanly flying machine that I could find.
My goodness, yeah.
It's like so.
It's got a unicycle up top.
Yeah,
it looks like someone in Brooklyn would be like flying around in this today.
Yeah, I mean they didn't have cameras back then, but you know he was twirling his mustache. When,
oh yeah, when and he says, "I'm going to fly. It's going to be great."
Yeah,
and then they're like, "What?" And he said, "Did I rudder?" And I was
and
like,
"Everyone laughed." Yeah, because they all understood your joke. So this
that's just a good thanks for painting that beautiful picture where everyone laughed at my joke.
It doesn't happen in real life.
No.
So this huge canopy up top that you described as a penguin was actually filled with a steam-powered tractor motor. So I imagine that was pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
They also had like this penny farthing wheel situation at the bottom that was meant to be landing gear, but then there were these little pedals that he would step on to control the rudder in the back. And it had a wingspan of 19 feet and 8 inches, and it apparently got two men off the ground going 14 miles an hour. I don't know how they were able to determine how fast they were going without a speedometer, because I don't see that in this picture here, but I also wasn't able to figure out how high they went, and I wish that I knew, because a lot of these, as we'll find out, don't get very high off the ground.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like... I mean, it looks like it's from the movie Wild Wild West.
Oh, absolutely. That's a perfect way of describing this thing. It's so gentlemanly, so steampunk, mm-hmm. and Will Smith probably has one in his house.
What? There's another dude in Wild Wild West.
No one knows his name.
And no one knows his name. And it's impossible to ever figure it out.
Right now, someone is yelling at us.
But if you could,
it's impossible.
Christoph Waltz would be awesome in that movie.
Oh yeah, he'd be perfect. I can't even visualize the other guy.
Yeah, only picture Christoph.
It's that guy. It's that guy. His name is Kevin Kline. There you go. How could we forget? Anyway, should we move on to our next one?
Which, we both agreed, but like the only thing we talked about before this was which was our favorite, and it was clearly this.
No, it's this one. Our favorite one's the next one.
Oh, okay.
We're talking about Chantay's gliding machine next, which was in 1883.
I think it's Chanute's.
That was 1896, not 1883. That was the last one. So this was, you think it's Chanute? Oh, yeah, it is Chanute.
Chantay sounds like a really
cool R&B
singer.
It was really far away.
I don't
have my glasses on. I could.
Chantay's gliding machine sounds like an R&B album.
It does. So this was put together by Mansur Octave Chanute, and he had many different gliding machines that he worked on. I think if you see like old footage of people trying to do this, he certainly comes up, because he had what I can only describe as like suits almost. They weren't really suits, but they were like this stack of wings.
It's like a stack of bow ties.
Yeah, you describe it.
Okay. Yeah, I would say a stack of, like, it looks kind of like a bunch of Oakley sunglasses without the arms.
Yeah.
But made out of paper with a bunch of ridges in between them. Or a bunch of angel wings, like five of them or six of them above, and two guys are holding the wings up because the thing's about to fall apart.
Yeah, there are two guys off to the side holding the wings up. So he has these stacks of wings that are, like, held together with probably reeds and linen to get the lift. And they were anywhere from, like, all the pictures I saw, he had, like, four stacks of wings. Some of them had, like, two pairs of wings on each stack, so it was like four wings in one stack, and then like they would some of them would have this one wing at the top just to kind of hold it all together, I guess. And it looks really funny. I definitely recommend looking this one up if you have a chance. But he was experimenting with different ways to control wing pressure and stability, and he came up with this strut wire, which you can kind of see here. It's these thicker wires holding the wings together that would eventually be used in the biplanes, and none of these were successful, but he did have an assistant named Augustus Moore Herring, who built this large wing glider that I don't have a picture of it here, but it looks exactly like something that Wile E. Coyote wears in one of the episodes.
Yeah.
It's like this suit with like wings from the from your sides up to your arms, and like he has that little like swimmer's cap he puts on.
I've seen
know?
It.
You know what I'm yeah. talking about. His assistant came up with that.
Was he a dude that did not make it in Paris when he tried to test it out?
I don't know.
The first guy that made the wingsuit jumped off the Eiffel Tower and didn't do so great.
These guys were in, I think, Indiana or no, they're in Michigan, somewhere around Michigan, Indiana. I think that cool. they moved around. But
I think when I was a kid, have you ever like jumped off something while holding a cardboard box?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
All right, like
you do it with like plastic bags, trying to make that a parachute.
I did it with like whenever my parents would buy something large, I'd yeah. go in my treehouse and try to jump out of it with yeah. cardboard.
Well, we would like tie G.I. Joes to them and then throw it out of our little like I don't know what you call it playground that we had in our yard.
Yeah,
and sort of like it makes them float. Why wouldn't it make us float? And we'd always chalk it up to we never got enough distance between where we jumped in the ground, so no air could fill the thing and make us fall yeah. slowly. We also did it with umbrellas.
Yeah, I think I've done that too. And right. I swear it worked.
Because of Mary Poppins? No, it did not.
I swear to God, when I was like 11 years old, I would think, I believed it worked. It didn't.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
I would have swore it did.
Should we move on to the Caproni's Nova plane?
Yeah, this is just this is a mess.
Or Nova Plano. This was in 1902, the Wright brothers invented the plane. So a lot of what we're going to talk about after this are just planes taken to every extreme that you yeah. can imagine. First one here is the Nova Plano from a company called Caproni, which is just it reminds me of Jabroni, and they got really adventurous. You told me it looks like a boat. Now tell me why you thought that.
I swear that's water underneath it, isn't it?
Yeah, describe this to our audience.
So it looks like a houseboat,
okay,
in limo form,
right,
with three biplanes on top of it.
So it's a limo houseboat with biplanes attached to it. You're not far off. So this was it was a 70, basically they made a 70 foot long boat. It weighed 55 tons, and on a large steamboat, you imagine they have those smokestacks. Instead of smokestacks, they replaced them with three biplane setups, basically.
Triple decker.
Yeah, triple decker. And it was pretty much the only triplane ever built, and it was meant to be the world's first transatlantic airliner. So it's supposed to commercially take people across the Atlantic. Want to take a guess as to whether this thing flew or not?
I'm going
to
say it sank immediately.
Well, it this thing got 60 feet in the air before it crash landed.
What?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it got 60 feet in the air, crash landed. They were going to repair it and fly it again, but the wreckage burned overnight, so they canned the project.
Jeez. I want to see this built again.
I know. It's so ridiculous. I love it so much. The next one's not too shabby either. This is Moulton Taylor's Aero Car, and I think people are familiar with this probably.
Yeah.
It was built in 1949. This is kind of a tragic story. We'll get to it. But first, can you describe what we're looking at for our audience?
Yeah, it's one of those little play school riding cars.
Yeah.
With an airplane tail.
Yeah, it's a car with a plane attached to it. So.
But I can't stress enough how much it looks like a toy car. It has like a little yellow like body.
Yeah, even the colors are very
He's even
toy-ish.
Got his arm out the window.
And these wheels, the wheels look like wagon wheels almost. Yeah. Yeah, they're not like car wheels, they're wagon wheels. So this was in 1949, and there's a guy named Robert E. Fulton Jr. He came up with the designs for a plane/car called the Airphibian, which I think is a much cooler name than the Aero Car, but that's just me. Moulton Taylor met with him. And they kind of talked about it, and Fulton Jr.'s ideas were just designs. He never put them into practice. But Taylor made some modifications. He had like folding wings as opposed to collapsible wings or something like that, and eventually designed and created the Aero Car. And he created a lightweight body that you see here. It looks like a toy, and basically attached it to those folding plane wings. And these things actually worked. As you can see, he's in the air.
It's so dope.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
So they worked. Apparently, they were able to go up to 60 miles per hour on land and 110 miles per hour in the air.
Yeah, and apparently at like 5,000 feet. He looks so high.
He looks very high up in the air. So his dreams came crashing to the ground because he tried to find 500 buyers for this thing so he could start manufacture on it, and barely managed to fill half of that order. So he just never made them. He never manufactured them. In the end, 6 prototypes were made. Some of them are in museums right now. You can go see them. Some of them are still flown. The first one ever created is no longer flown. And some private collectors have bought them for millions of dollars.
That's amazing.
But it is, I wish they made these. It's a flying car, man.
No, you said tragic. I thought he was going to die.
No, the tragedy is that it never got mass produced.
Okay.
Because he couldn't even fill 500 orders. 500 people were like, yeah, I want that.
I'd argue that it, that's probably for the best.
Maybe.
I mean, with how many car accidents there are today, I mean, I don't need vertical to be added to the equation.
Yeah. Speaking of, I forget where my segue was. Actually, speaking of segues, let's talk about the DeLackner HZ1 Aerocycle, shall we?
Yeah, what a showy name.
This came along, I think the first like tests were done in 1956. It was also called the Helivector or the YHO2. It was meant to be like a personalized helicopter. Can you describe what we're seeing here?
It's a guy on a Segway.
Yes.
On top of a drone.
Yeah, it's basically a drone, but there's one giant propeller that is right underneath their feet, and then where the fans on a modern day drone would be are these like counterweights.
Yeah.
And then in the middle there's this big weight and that then, says US Army.
And then like 2 inches from your choppable legs.
Yeah, yeah.
Are big giant blades.
Right, one slip and you've caught your legs in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great idea, but it is hilarious. So this thing, much like a Segway, was driven by leaning.
How fun would it
be? It was balance driven.
Would it be to drop carrots and stuff and like have them chop for salads underneath? Like have some with a bowl?
Yeah, until it like hits the blade wrong and comes flying to your face at 400 miles an hour.
Yeah.
That's great. So the idea behind this thing was they wanted to make it so that you could just zip onto the battlefield and surprise the enemy. Like I said, it steered like a Segway just by balance, and they wanted this to be able to be piloted by anyone. So they instead of like doing rigorous testing on it, they had these inexperienced soldiers. They gave them 20 minutes of instructions and said, all right, pilot this thing. And three crashes later, the project was scrapped. Never saw the light of day.
Yeah, how many legs later?
There were no casualties. There were people did get injured, but no one died, as far as I read.
Cool.
On this thing. So
and it didn't kill anyone either from being successful.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank God it never made its way to the battlefield. Yeah. But hey, if they did crash it in the enemy lines, it would probably also kill some of the enemy soldiers. So
that's good. If they're bad guys,
you win some, you lose some, right? The next one we've got is pretty darn cool. It is the Arvo Canada Z or VZ9 Arvo car. What is this thing, John? What are we looking at?
Avro car.
Avro. I can read today, John.
It's like a plane engine in the middle of a UFO.
Yeah, it's just a UFO, dude. So in the middle, there's like this giant plane engine. It's vertical as opposed to sideways like a plane. And then there's this tiny little seat off to the side. It's like a bubble that they can sit in. It's a one-seater, if you will. And many people think that this is like crafts like this that they were testing are where UFO sightings came from.
Yeah,
I'm
going to say this is what gave Area 51 its reputation and stuff like this.
Yeah, so there are many other flying machines like this, but I chose this one because it looks exactly like a flying saucer. This came about in 1958, so it's right about in our wheelhouse of the UFO mania. Could seat one person, and they wanted something that could go very high and very fast, and they got neither of those. This thing, I don't think that you could get this thing off the ground. After 4 years, they scrapped the project because they could never get it more than a couple feet off the ground.
Why is it called Canada?
Canada was working on it.
Oh, okay.
At first, it does say U.S. Air Force. They must have been partnering. I don't know. But that's that. What do you think of the Avro car? I can read today, John.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. Next up, we have the Goodyear Inflatoplane from 1959. Just based on the name, what do you think this is?
Oh man, you know, it kind of looks like a security camera with wings. To me.
Okay, I can see that. I can see that. Is that the security camera?
I can't tell what's going on here. It's just like a...
It looks like a plane, like a personal plane.
Yeah, but like Star Wars-ish.
Star Wars-ish?
Because of the squareness of the nose. And
it's got a square nose and then like it's very, very rounded on the wings and the body.
Yeah, like bent down and weird. It looks like something that would be in a Star Wars movie.
Sure. This was a couple of years before Star Wars. Maybe they're just ahead of their time. Like I said, this was put together by Goodyear, known for their tires and blimps.
And inflatable planes.
And inflatable planes. Not so much. This was built completely out of rubber, except for the engine, of course. You can't build an engine out of rubber, as far as I know. If anyone has evidence to the contrary, I'd love to see that. And it could easily be carried in a box and be inflated with a bike pump in 15 minutes or less.
Or a mouth. Or... And a strong pair of lungs.
Yeah. And the thing is, it worked fantastically. Like, this worked just like the hobby planes that people, what do you call those? The aero gliders or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, it worked just like that. It was perfect. And they tried to sell it to the U.S. military, except it was a balloon. it was a rubber balloon. And they're like, one shot and that thing's done.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet you they could have just changed the material and they would have been fine today if this was still around.
Like Kevlar or something.
Yeah. But now it's just like, there's no need for really cool creative inventions like this because the military has too much money. They'll just spend $1 billion on something else.
Well, it's funny that you say that because our next one was thanks to a competition that the U.S. Army held. Let me show you this one. Describe this to our audience. It is the Lockheed Martin P-791 from 2006.
Yeah, it looks like a triple butt.
It does look like a triple butt. If you could imagine an alien with three butt cheeks.
Or like a hot dog in between two buns, except that they're all white and they have a blue line around them.
Yeah, it's held together with a rubber band.
And it's got four legs on the bottom that are like hair dryers.
Yeah, so much like our Avro car, there's like these three discs on the bottom that are like jet engines.
There's a fourth one. There's four.
Is there? Oh, did I say three? I meant four. I'm looking at four. The way that I would describe it is like a blimp if you tried to smash three of them together and then slap some wings on the side and...
Some hair dryers on the bottom.
So this thing, it was built as a part of the U.S. Army's Long Endurance Multi-Intelligence Vehicle Program. They wanted something that was like as fast as an airplane, but as buoyant as an airship, basically a blimp.
Have you noticed that everything so far has been like white or silver?
Yeah, it's very futuristic. You want one of them just to be like orange?
Yeah. I mean, I just don't... is that to reflect and like hide better and camouflage against clouds and sky?
You know, that's a really good question. What do you think? Well, if you saw this, you'd probably just think it's a weird looking cloud, right?
Yeah, but then I'd get rid of that blue line.
Yeah. No, that's to blend it in with the sky.
I'd make it camouflage better by putting a big lacuta on top of it, a fishing pole.
Yeah, so this thing could stay buoyant in the air for up to 3 weeks. It could get 20,000 feet in the air. And basically, they wanted a blimp, but this is like way more futuristic because they wanted it to be maneuverable like an airplane.
And
because
this one's three blimps.
It is three blimps. They had a successful test launch in 2006, but apparently lost the competition to the Northrop Grumman HAV-3, which... I don't have a picture of here, but it is basically just a blimp. And apparently Lockheed Martin still makes an airship like this, but all of the designs just look like blimps. So there's no point in even talking about them. They're just blimps anymore. This thing is like, almost sexual.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I always wonder, like, as far as cars go, because that's like something that's mass produced and we actually do have access to buy.
Yeah.
Like, look at all the creativity that everyone has in all these and how like cool and futuristic they are.
Yeah.
And I was always like, why do cars mostly look the same and are boring?
Yeah.
Like, why doesn't someone make a car with a normal, like, crappy Honda Accord engine,
yeah,
but make it look like a Lambo and, like, really, like, low and flat? And I realize it's, like... They could, yeah, but they don't, because then, I don't know.
A lot of the problem is just aerodynamics. That's why a lot of these look similar, like they're rounded and stuff. And planes look like planes because they've perfected the aerodynamics and the fluid dynamics involved with making planes. So why fix what isn't broken, John?
And it's fair enough, fella.
Speaking of fixing what isn't broken, do you want to take a quick break and we'll be right back?
Yeah, what are we going to glue together some pottery?
Yeah.
All right.
Why are we gluing together pottery?
You said we're going to fix something that's broken.
Oh, our podcast.
Oh.
John.
Yeah.
This is the first episode where I'm not going to interrupt you when I ask where people can find us.
Oh, that's wonderful, because I have a lot to say about that, and I just wish that you wouldn't interrupt me as much. And
you're waiting for me to interrupt you because you... You don't want to finish your sentence.
Yeah.
You can find us at StrangerStillShow.com. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you want. But the most important place is FlyingMachine.network. And why is that, John?
Because that's where you can listen to us and other great shows on FlyingMachine.network.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the Flying Machine podcast, which is deep dives into different like storytelling or
yeah, it's starting to expand more and more because then we get the Firefly show.
Well, that's the Patreon. I was just talking about the podcast.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The podcast is where Malcolm and Justin and whoever else wants to jump in talk about the things that they love and what make them great, or they talk about like they tell short stories or stuff like that. So there's also Divisive Issues, which is a comic book podcast. There's Falling in Love Montage, which is a chick flick podcast. There's The Losers, which is a, how do you describe that? It is a Oscar review show.
Yeah.
Sure. There's the Pot Stir podcast, which is a political show, and Short, Colorful, and Loud, which is a children's media review, well, children's film review podcast. And then there's us. Lonely old us. Yeah. If you head over to flyingmachine.network, you can find out about our Patreon, which supports our show. Make sure that we can keep making good stuff. This is the last day of our Patreon drive. If we can get $4 more to our goal, there will be another bonus show on the Patreon feed where Malcolm will talk about the catalog of Coen Brothers films. So just $4. And you get something in return for kicking some shekels our way. For $1 a month, you get a newsletter. You get Ryan's music blogs. You get access to the Comrade Radio podcast.
My online undying love and respect.
Yeah.
My undying love and respect.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
Yeah. You also get live streams, which you tried to do. You tried to live stream some music.
Yeah.
It was hard to do.
Yeah. Old computer.
As this episode comes out, if you listen to this the day the episode comes out, Wednesday, the 31st of July, Malcolm and Ryan will be talking about the two Alien movies on a live stream. So make sure you check that out tonight. Just for $1 a month, you get access to all that stuff. For $5 a month, you get access to all that, plus the APOC radio podcast collection and bonus episodes for every single show on the network once every month.
Yeah.
We make a new bonus episode every month.
So you're like, you're doing dishes. You're like, ugh, I've listened to all the Flying Machine shows.
Yeah. I've listened to everything sick I of could them. Possibly listen to.
I'm sick of listening to Stranger Still 5 times a day.
Yeah.
I wish I could listen to them talk about other stuff. And I wish I could just hear them say the F word once.
Yeah.
Well, now you can.
Yeah. Right now on the bonus episode feed, there are 78 episodes from across the network. It's been going for more than a year. It's well worth your time and effort. So next month, Ryan tries to buy a Flash comic on our bonus episode, and you'll just have to listen in to figure out how that ends up.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Literally, we had to stop recording our last episode that you just listened to.
Yeah. So good.
And yeah, he went onto eBay and buckled down.
Yeah.
He almost broke that refresh button.
I know. And then that's also where you get the Firefly show that you mentioned. You get the MCU, and then if we get just $4 more, you'll get the Coen Brothers show. So... and then $10 a month to get all that, and you get an annual gift box from the Flying Machine, which could be anything. It's probably awesome.
Maybe it's like a Belle Delphine thing, and we'll spit in a cup or something.
Gross. But it,
no?
Maybe.
Or bathwater. I could give my bathwater.
You think so?
Yeah, why not?
You think there's a market for that?
I don't know. How much is it a month?
$10.
That's way worth my bath water. I've got like essential oils in there and stuff. Yeah. I'll throw it in.
Capture my shower water then.
Yeah, you'll have to capture your shower water. You come over and take a bath. You have a bath here,
don't you? I do have a bath. I just don't like taking them.
Not even for $10 a month.
Okay, fine. So for more details, you can also go to patreon.com/flyingmachine for all of that. And next month, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled episodes.
Mm-hmm. Nice and boring.
We'll probably talk about ticks or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's Lyme disease? Does it hurt your ticks?
Does it hurt your ticks?
I don't know. I'm saying something stupid I would say on the show, fella. I'm kidding. We're great. Love our show.
Yeah.
So do you. And that's why you're going to leave us a review, which rhymes. Do it. Also, I found out how much reviews actually matter on iTunes.
Yeah.
That sometimes it's like some people have even heard, which is me. This is what I heard.
Okay.
That they're more important than downloads because iTunes makes you more searchable based on how many reviews you have.
Yeah.
So please, for the
love that's true,
of Jesus Christopher Christ or any being or deity that you subscribe to.
Jesus Christopher Columbus.
Go, well, not a big fan, but to each his own. Go leave us a review on iTunes.
I know that that's true because ever since the new season of Stranger Things came out, if you type Stranger into iTunes, the first like 10 podcasts are Stranger Things podcasts.
Yeah, because they have more reviews. Go sucker punch them with some reviews.
Yeah, so thanks. And with that, I'm still Nick.
I'm still John.
And this is Stranger Still.
I had to look it up. Yeah.
I give you the incredible flying. machine.